Last week in the podcast, I introduced you to Andrea Decker, and Andrea's blog is a blog I read every single day, and her blogging has really impacted my life. This week, I want to introduce you to Laura Vanderkam. Laura is also a blogger, but she has impacted my life through her physical books. I think I've literally read them all. The two that I read first were What Most Successful People Do Before Breakfast and What Most Successful People Do on the Weekend. These are great, short, easy-to-read books which give you some snippets and habits that you can add into your life. Then her other two books that I have that are my favorites and really created some big mindset shifts in my life are 168 Hours, You Have More Time Than You Think, and I Know How She Does It. Yeah. First of all, Laura is excellent at writing titles of books. I mean, she's really good. Don't you want to go read all of those books? Those are some excellent titles. And the material in the books do not disappoint. She gives great actionable advice that you can implement into your own life and ways to create habits and routines that will end up giving you more time. I consider Laura my time expert. Whenever I want to learn more about time, how to maximize my time, how successful people use time, I go and I reread and re-listen to Laura's books. I have listened to all of those books at least twice, and some of them more often than that. So I am pleased to introduce you to Laura Vanderkam, who's been changing the way I think about time for the last 5 years. Welcome to the Organized 365 podcast. My name is Lisa Woodruff, and I'm a professional organizer and blogger in Cincinnati, Ohio. I want to help you get your home organized and help you organize life stages and unexpected events. So sit back, relax, and let's get organized. Laura, welcome to the Organized 365 podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
I am so excited to introduce you to my audience. Back when I started podcasting 3.5 years ago, I always knew I wanted to have you on my podcast and talk to you one day because I feel like I know so much about you. I listen to your podcast. I've read all of your books. And so now you are on the receiving end of what I'm normally on the receiving end of is I know more about you than you know about me.
Exactly. Well, that's good. Then I can save myself some time on the introductions.
It is a little bit odd though when, you know, I share a lot on my podcast and you share a lot on your podcast as well. Your podcast is called The Best of Both Worlds. You guys are going to want to go download it. I love finding out the behind the scenes, you know, like what your family life is really like and your schedule, even more so than I get in books. I love getting to know people through podcasts.
You really do. I mean, you hear their voices and it feels like they're your friends. And I mean, I listen to a lot of podcasts and I realize, well, if I want to have that relationship with my readers, then probably that's what I should do. And the blog is one part of that. Obviously, I blog most days and write about my life there. But there's something about hearing a person's voice, I guess, that's just more visceral, more intimate. And so that's what we're doing.
Yeah, I love it. So let's talk about your podcast first. The podcast is called Best of Both Worlds. I found it like literally when you had only listed episode number 2, because I am always searching for a podcast about successful women and how they get it done. That would be my summation of your podcast. What's your summation of your podcast?
Well, definitely. I mean, we're trying to explore the world of people who love their families, love their jobs. In many cases for women, these are presented as oppositional things. And Sarah, my co-host, Dr. Sarah Hart Unger, and I don't believe that at all. Like, we believe that you can truly love both and want to hit it out on the park on both. And so we talk about it from that perspective and how we've learned to manage the moving parts of our careers and our families, and then talk to other women who are doing the same. And hopefully we can all learn from each other.
Okay. So how do you record a podcast when you are busy, you know, living the best of both worlds? A podcast is not a quick and easy thing if you guys don't know.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, it's not a quick and easy thing necessarily, although we've gotten better at it as time has gone on. The software is great. So in the sense that she lives in Miami Beach and I live in Philadelphia, and so but we don't actually have to be in the same place. And there's great software that can mix our voices together, so it sounds like we are in the same room just having a conversation. But I mean, that was one of the reasons that there, in fact, isn't a whole lot aimed mm-hmm. at successful professional women, because when would they record it? Like, if you're in the office 9 to 5 and then you're with your family 5 to 9 and then weekends, like, there's no real time for you to do this other thing. And so what helped with that, I mean, obviously I have a very flexible schedule. I'm running my own business. And Sarah had gone to an 80% schedule to give herself some time for various other things. And then she decided that this was one of the projects she wanted to pursue in her day that she wasn't seeing patients. So that's how we have that available. But we've also, you know, we're interviewing a lot of people. We've got some great interviews coming up. People who do have normal day jobs, and often it's that they're going to record on their lunch break, or we record early in the morning or something like that. And, you know, hopefully we can share those stories with people, and so people can see how women do get it all done.
Well, and I think the reason why I knew when I found your name associated with your own podcast immediately what I was going to get upon download is because I've read all your books. And I was going to show them to you, but I don't have them physically. I have them on Audible and I have them on Kindle. And I used to have them physically, but I keep giving them away. Literally, I'm responsible for multiple sales of every single copy.
So. I love to hear that. Thank you so much.
And the first two I found are super quick and easy. You guys, you can download either of these on your Kindle or your Audible. You'll get done with it in one day. Are What Most Successful People Do Before Breakfast and What Most Successful People Do on the Weekend. So I associate you with successful people. Like, you know what successful people do. And so I read your books. That's how I found you.
Yeah. Those were some fun short ebooks that I wrote originally, just around a concept. I had written a post for a place years ago that was called What the Most Successful People Do Before Breakfast. And I realized that this was just like a clickbaity title.
Yes.
Like, people were drawn to it. And people love the idea of morning mm-hmm. routines. I mean, and I like the idea of morning routines. I can't say that I really have one, but I do love the idea. And so that came out of that. And then I, you know, got to interview all sorts of other people about how they spend their weekends and how they spend their work days. And that's where that came from.
Well, and I recorded a morning routine podcast on my podcast back in the fall, basically saying that, hey, I'm a mom of teenagers that works from home. Like, if you think I'm getting up early and working out and taking a cold shower and drinking lemon water, I'm not. this is what I'm doing. And I realistically broke down what I was doing. But one thing I noticed on your podcast, and I noticed from successful people in any field, no matter how you determine what success is they're very goal-oriented. On your podcast, in all of your books, and what I share with people, it's all about how you view your time, how you view your priorities, setting a goal, and then getting that goal accomplished. And I feel like that's kind of the undertone of all of your books, is like, you can do whatever you want. You can't do everything, but you can do whatever you want as long as you make it a priority, set a goal, go after that goal, and then pick a new goal. Like, you can't pick them all at once. But if you want to do something, anything, you can make it work.
Yeah, I think that's generally the case. And I mean, you know, you could think, well, maybe you'll just be phenomenally lucky and like wonderful, amazing things will fall into your lap. And that's great. And often wonderful, amazing things do fall into people's lap. But you may not want to bet on that, you know? So if there is something in particular that you wish to have happen in your life, you're better off figuring out, well, what are the steps I need to take to get there? If there's things that involve gatekeepers, what can I do to make the best impression possible, or make sure that there are other ways around this, or what, you know, just considering all your angles and what steps I need to take to get there, and then setting timelines for that and intentionally going after them. I mean, that's really the goal setting process for anything.
Now, you and I like to set goals. Lots of people, when you say goals, they turn the podcast off. Not my listeners, because they're amazingly awesome.
Of course.
But sometimes they do. One of the things I know your books initially taught me to do, I love to analyze and dissect and figure out ways to get around problems. Your books and your methodology have really helped me look at time differently. The way you analyze
successful people's time, especially in your book that came out, I Know How She Does It. Talk about a great title. I was like, I think I downloaded it. I know I did. I got it the day. I mean, as soon as it came out, I read it that day. Like, I was so excited to read that book. I was like, great, how did she do it?
By the way, that's what everyone should do with my books, right? The day they come out, just go.
We'll tell you when the next one's coming out at the end here. And I will be the first one to get it, just so you
know. Yay!
So I Know How She Does It. Some of the things I loved, and now I get all the books confused, so I can't quote which thing comes from which book. But some of the ideas, I think this one came from the book, I Know What Successful People Do Before Breakfast, was to have breakfast as your family meal and not dinner as your family meal. Like, you don't have to, like, rethink about if you want to have a family meal, why does it have to be dinner if that's the stressful time and no one can make it? What about going into work half an hour later and having your breakfast be a meal? How'd you come up with that?
Well, I mean, it's just, I think, well, people sort of glorify family dinner. It's like, but what is the thing that is happening? Well, it's that you're all gathered around the table talking with each other. Well, you know, and even if you want to make it about a meal, like, why does it have to be dinner? You right. could do family breakfast twice a weekend lunch. Like, I mean, you could have plenty of family meals, even if none of them were a Monday through Thursday dinner. And so I think by giving us the opportunity to get the same goal accomplished, but through slightly different means, we can often make life easier on ourselves. And you know, oftentimes people are in the house for breakfast. I mean, you all have to start there.
Right.
I mean, unless someone's traveling, you're all there in the morning anyway. And so it's just a question of figuring out, well, is there a time we could all sit down together? And, you know, I don't know about your house, but in my house, sort of breakfast food is generally more palatable than whatever we're serving.
Yes, no one wants what we make for dinner. What is up with that?
Yeah.
I've given up.
So, you know, breakfast food is fun. We mm-hmm. like breakfast food. And oftentimes people are in a better mood in the morning. I mean, maybe not with your teenagers, but certainly if you've got younger kids, they tend to be better off in terms of their mood at that point. So, yeah, that's family breakfast can be a great option for busy families.
Well, it's that whole idea of looking at your time differently. So I'm realizing I didn't pull up this book, but is it 172 or
168.
I always give it extra hours.
If you got four extra hours.
168 hours. You have more time than you think. That's the name of another book, which I did not pull up on my phone. So it must be somewhere else. I've given that one away so many times. I probably don't have a copy anymore. That book totally changed how I looked at hours. Like, okay, you have 168 hours. And you gave us all these different ways to break them down. And also, I can't remember which book, but you tell us that we have the same amount of hours from Monday morning to Thursday night as we have from Thursday night to Monday morning. And so your halfway point through the week is Thursday night, but we don't really look at time that way. So that book, you allocated how many sleep hours you need and how many eating hours and how many work hours. And when you broke it down, I realized, holy cow, we have like 60 free hours a week where we're not working or sleeping or eating. That's another job. And ever since you told me that, I can't get my husband to see that. But now I look at, he's basically doing a full-time job trying to recover from his full-time job. And I'm like, dude, take an hour and then let's do something else productive, because I'm the productive one. He's a recovering one. He has to live with me. But it's just so true. If you think your school-based schedule, you get up, you go to school, you come home, you do homework, you get to enjoy your day, you go to bed. We take that into our adulthood and we don't stop and think, you know, we can do this however we want. Like, and so my goal is going to be to work Monday morning through Thursday night and then to be off Thursday night through Monday morning eventually.
That sounds great. Well, I mean, and I think for a lot of people that is a aha moment when they realize mm-hmm. that Thursday end of the workday is the midpoint of the week. You know, I track my time on these weekly spreadsheets that go from Monday morning to Monday morning, starts at 5 a.m. Monday morning, goes to 5 a.m. Monday morning. And so, yeah, the midway point is 5 p.m. Thursday. And 5 p.m. Thursday always sounds to people like the end of the week, but it's not. It is the exact halfway
mark. Yes.
And so whatever your balance might be Monday morning to end of day Thursday, you know, which may not be perfectly balanced in whatever balance means,
right.
But probably end of day Thursday to Monday morning looks completely different, right? And so if that balance is very, very different, and so it might, the two balances might actually balance each other out. And that's a great way to think about that, especially people who worry that they're somehow not achieving whatever balance it is that they are attempting to achieve. But I think the other thing to think about is one of the reasons that it doesn't feel like there's as much time from end of day Thursday to Monday morning is that we don't take that time as seriously.
Right.
As we do Monday morning. We don't plan it. We don't have intentions for it. We don't, and you know, you don't want to plan every minute. It's not like sending Outlook invites for dinner or every 15 minutes. You could, but you know, like you don't have to schedule every 15 minutes. I'm not saying you have to do that, but just if you think about, well, you know, here are a couple things I'd like to do. Here's some things I want to, you know, have happen in this time, things that would make me feel happy, renewed, rejuvenated. Like, then that will seem like more time. And when it seems like more time, then we appreciate just how vast time is and we start viewing our time more holistically.
And why do we prioritize work time and all these other times, but we don't want to schedule our own time for ourselves or our own leisure? Because then, I guess because you put it on a schedule, it feels less leisurely. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think we should do it. I do it.
I do too, but we're you know, you and I are planners, of course.
Yeah, we're planners,
and
clearly.
People are not. There are many people who are not. And for those people, again, I'm not saying plan every 15 minutes, but if there are things you would like to do in your life other than work, then you need to treat that time with some of the same seriousness that you would give to work. And let's not use it in the word seriousness. Let's use intentionality, because that doesn't sound sort of like not fun. And so it's not about scheduling things you have to do. It's about scheduling things you want to do. I'm not saying like, you know, organize your weekend for getting all these chores done. Like, who cares if the chores get done? I don't care if the chores get done. But if you want to do other things, you want to see friends, you want to go for a bike ride, you want to like take a day trip somewhere in your area.
Yeah.
Think about how you could do that, when, you know, what would make the logistics work, have a rough intention, and then you'll do stuff in your leisure time that will make your leisure time feel more full. You know, you can just sort of decide in the spur of moment to do stuff. And for some people, serendipity works. But if you are the kind of person who doesn't have as much leisure time as you might necessarily want, which probably, you know, is a lot of people who have, for instance, small kids, who have jobs, then you cannot be totally leisurely about your leisure time and expect
right.
it to be fulfilling. Yep. And if you hold on to this idea that it has to be just sort of completely serendipitous and we'll decide in the moment what we want to do, then you will never do anything.
Exactly.
And you tell yourself that, oh, it's impossible when you have kids, or it's impossible when you have a job. It is not impossible. It is not impossible at all.
Yes.
It's that you aren't willing to take that single step that would make it happen. So don't blame anyone else. Don't blame the situation. It is you. It is all you.
I love it. So I don't schedule a lot of things on my weekend, but I will pick 1 to 3 things that I want to get accomplished myself. And then I will loosely put those on the calendar. So yep. when the kids and my husband say we want to do XYZ, then I look at what I also want to get done. And sometimes I get rid of what I want to get done for what they want to get done. And other times I say, that's fine, but I'm doing this at this time. And I'm at least in the equation. It's not like they get to plan everything. And then if there's any time left over, I will figure out if there's something I want to do. I know going into the weekend what I want to do. They get asked what they want to do. And then we pick from those different pieces. I think a lot of times, especially as women, we don't even know what we want to get done or make it known what we want to get done in the weekend. And we just do whatever the household and the kids need versus thinking about ourselves from a productive, proactive standpoint.
Yeah. Although, I mean, I think sometimes it, like this, you know, blaming it on other people, again, it's putting it on someone else. It, like, there's plenty of time. You'll just be puttering around the house doing nothing
yes.
for like 20 minutes here and there during the, like, you could totally go, if you've got that basement treadmill gathering dust, you could go run on it. You could go run outside. Like, nobody cares. Like, don't make yourself into this martyr of, you know, I can't do anything because I have kids. You totally can do stuff if you have kids. There are people who are in far more straitened circumstances than you are who are pulling this stuff off. So anyway, I just getting up on my soapbox there, but you know, it doesn't have to be much. Like, I make sure that I run every day. So for instance, on Saturday and Sunday, I will run at some point. It doesn't have to be much. It might only be 20 minutes, but it still got done. And you know, there are 20 minutes where people aren't doing anything, or like 20 minutes where everyone's like watching cartoons. I can go run, like, that's fine. And so then I've done it and I feel good about it. And you know, I don't really need to do that much else. Like, I can just go with the flow the rest of the time.
Okay. Well, also, Laura, we are very tired. We're always very tired. And you've mentioned this in a couple of your books, but you said on your podcast that your ideal number of sleep hours is 7.4 hours, right? Is it 7.4 or 7.2?
So yes, I sleep 7.4 hours a night, averaged over long periods of time. That doesn't mean I sleep 7.4 hours every night. It doesn't even mean that I sleep 51.8 hours every week. It just means that over the long haul, I get 7.4 hours. And I didn't know that about myself until I started tracking time continuously. And it was, very interesting to see, because I started tracking my time continuously in April 2015. And I, went for a month and I started averaging. I was literally between 7 and 8 hours a day. And then I added up the first 6 months and I was like, oh, it's just 7.4 hours. Interesting. And then I did the first full year and it was like also 7.4 hours averaged over that 6 months. It's like, that is very interesting. Apparently that's what I'm aiming for. And then I went another year, and that next year, the average was also 7.4 hours. So clearly this is what my body is aiming for. And so what winds up happening is if I get under that for too long in a row, like I have a couple of weeks that are like in the 40s in terms of total sleep hours, I'll start going to bed really early. I'll start trying to take naps on weekends. Of course, if I've gotten a lot of sleep, then I might, wake up early, like before I need to, or I might, stay up late sometime. And, it's just, that's what I average out to over the long haul. And so I suspect that that's roughly what my body is aiming for. And I can get it in good ways, which is, go to bed at 11 and wake up at 6:24. Yeah. But there are, bad ways to get it too, which is that it's, disrupted and I have to catch naps and crash early and, sleep later than I thought it would. There are lots of ways to get to 7.4 that says nothing about the quality, but apparently that's the number at least.
It's so interesting because I tried, knowing that we were doing this interview, I tried to track my sleep for 2 weeks and I did it two nights. So clearly I'm not as good at tracking as you are, but I have always said I need about 6 or 7 hours. But on the weekends I do sleep in. Like normally I get up at 6 with Joey and I don't really take naps, but on the weekends I'll definitely sleep until 8, 9, or 10 o'clock. And so after hearing you, I was like, if I average that, that's going to be what my average is, which is just another interesting idea. If you're really tired, if you're taking naps, if you're sleeping in longer on the weekends, then you probably aren't getting what your body needs during the week, so it's making it up. If you bounce out of bed on the weekends and you have the same exact amount of sleep that you have during the week, you probably are at your ideal number every day of the week. So I just thought that was just interesting food for thought.
Yeah. What's also interesting to me is I'll have people tell me that they sleep 6 hours a night or something. And what that again means is that they slept 6 hours Monday and Tuesday.
Yes.
And then the other night something else happened that in their mind was atypical. Like right. They slept through their alarm or they crashed early. It's like, somehow in their mind it doesn't count because Monday and Tuesday are the nights that count. And this is how people wind up with different numbers in their minds that they sleep versus how many they actually sleep. But you add up the whole week and it averages out to something different. I mean, it might average out to like 7 hours or more even, but that in their minds, the shortest nights were typical.
Yeah. So in your book, I Know How She Does It, you actually looked at time studies of, I can't remember how many women, and that's what you found, was that the amount of hours that they thought they were working did not vary as much as we think. Do you want to speak to that?
So for I Know How She Does It, I had women record their lives, hour by hour, half hour by half hour, actually. And I got 1,001 days in the lives of women with professional jobs who also had children at home. And so I could see how many hours people were working. And the average work week that was recorded was 44 hours, which is more than 40. Which is, I guess, not surprising given that these were, really well-paid professional jobs and all that, but it's not a lot more than 40, right? It's, it's within spitting distance of 40. And so, that was good to see. Women were also sleeping, 54 hours a week on average, which is just a little bit under 8 hours a day, because 8 hours a day would be 56 hours a week. So 54 hours a week is just a little bit under that. And so, you know, between that, you add that up, 44 plus 54, subtract from 168 hours a week, you've got 70 hours for other things. So it's like not actually surprising that women had pretty balanced lives. I mean, they had time for their families, they had time for friends, they had time for exercise, they had time for other things, because there's 70 hours. Like, that's a lot of time. And so, you know, that was the point of the book, is to show in actual numbers what the life of a professional woman who has kids looks like. And because we have these sort of horror stories out there, like, you'll never sleep, you'll never have time for anything else. Like, you know, it's not actually true.
Well, also in that book, you talked about how obviously the women weren't doing it all. They were definitely outsourcing household tasks, childcare, things like that. And that you made a distinction in that some people would partially outsource a task and they would be partially satisfied with that. And some people would fully outsource a task. And then when it was fully outsourced, they literally didn't have to think about it. Could you also share with us, like, give an example and how that looks?
Yeah. So, I mean, interestingly with that, I'm trying to think how.
So, like, you had the house, because I have your books memorized. Laura, yeah, no, so let me just tell you.
Housekeeping, right? Yeah. So a lot of people hire a cleaning service because that's the most obvious way to get your house clean, and particularly if you don't have experience, like, personally hiring people, having a payroll, things like that. It's more straightforward. And so the problem is, of course, that many services don't do the stuff that actually takes you time. Like, which is the laundry, which is the day-to-day cleaning of the kitchen and picking up stuff around the house. So they'll do the deep clean. And so what happens is people had cleaner houses than they might have otherwise had, because somebody's in there, like, dusting everything and vacuuming and all that. But it didn't actually save people time. Some of the people who saved the most time on housework had specifically thought about the things that took their time and had outsourced that. And so they had hired a person, for instance, to come do their laundry and pick up multiple times per week, for instance. So either have a housekeeper who came in 2 to 3 times a week, or else, you know, if they had a nanny, for instance, who had some extra time while kids were napping or in school or something, they might have that person do the cleaning a couple times a week. And so that actually saved them time in a way that the more obvious outsourcing did not. And so I think those are the kinds of things to think about when you're trying to get stuff off your plate. Instead of going with necessarily the most obvious idea, say, well, what is actually taking my time? And then from there, say, well, how can I offload that?
Yes. And what I found was women would constantly call us when their youngest child was in kindergarten or first grade, and all of a sudden the house was getting away from them. These were professional women and they wanted their house organized. And they would say, you know, I used to do just fine when the kids were younger, like, my work didn't change. I have no idea what changed. And I was like, you got rid of your nanny. Like, your nanny was not just watching the kids. She was preparing dishes. She was dinner. She was grocery shopping. She was cleaning. She was doing laundry. Like, she was doing half housework, half nannying. You got rid of the nanny when the kids went to school. And when I would professionally organize for people, when I left, I would say, you need a personal assistant. And in almost every case, I would help them hire a personal assistant 2 or 3 times a week to come in and do what the nanny had done that was not childcare related. Yeah. I always cite the Pew Research Institute, which says that we are doing 18 hours of household related activities per week, not related to childcare, in American homes. Mm-hmm. That is a lot of household related activities, cooking, cleaning, picking up laundry. All of these things take a lot of time. We underestimate the amount of hours we're spending taking care of our home, which is fine to spend your hours taking care of your home, but recognize you have a part-time job as a homeowner just taking care of your home. That's not counting any outside job you have, childcare, if you have a spouse, if you are a friend, fulfilling yourself. That's 20 hours right off the bat. So you can do that yourself, or you can outsource it, but give yourself credit for actually doing that activity.
Yeah. No, I think just knowing where the time goes is key. And a lot of that is sort of multitask time while you're doing other things too. And so it doesn't necessarily register of how much time it's taking, but it can also expand to fill the available space too. And so one thing that I often tell people to do is, like, set a time for chores on weekends. Say, I'm going to do chores from, I don't know, noon to 2 or whatever it is. And then if it's not done within that time, it probably wasn't that important. Like, let me get the main stuff done during that time. And, you know, stop worrying about it the rest of the time. Because otherwise you could be doing it the whole time. I mean, you're sitting in the house on the weekend, you're seeing this stuff constantly. You could be constantly picking stuff up because it will migrate from wherever it was in the first place. And so you drive yourself crazy with that. Or you could not, and that's a choice.
Yeah. And I love how you are really good about explaining that we have a choice. I think so many of us feel like we don't have a choice, that the house is our responsibility, the children are our responsibility, it's all on our plate unless we delegate it to another family member or to an outside task. If it's not done, it's our problem and only our problem if it doesn't get done. And I think we put that on ourselves. Yeah. Often no one puts that on us, but we put that on ourselves from these mythical TV images that we have that, you know, I mean, I grew up watching Leave It to Beaver and I was like, oh, that'd be so amazing. You know, all she was doing was cooking the entire time. I don't cook. I'm really, really bad at it. Yeah. But I always wanted to be her.
Well, I think there's also a story people tell themselves that I am the overworked second shift, whatever person. And so then it becomes your story and that's how you start acting. And I don't know if you read Bridget Schulte's book, Overwhelmed, but at one point she's like cleaning the oven while her husband is sitting watching TV. And it's like, but why? Like, was stuff actually catching fire? Like in your, like, why did, it's just in her mind, she was going to be, I'm cleaning the oven. You're being the horrible, lazy guy sitting on the couch watching TV. It was like, well, it didn't actually have to get done at that moment. You were doing this to yourself. And people walk around with that story.
Yeah, it is harder than you think though, because I'm pretty good about, like, you know, we share the work around here and I'm working too. And so we had our son's birthday last night. We're recording this on January 9th. And I was going to get the trees down, the Christmas trees down, like the weekend, last weekend. Then I was going to get them down on the 7th. And I didn't, like, all the ornaments are down, but both of the trees are still up with lights on them. I had this whole work thing I had to do. I even said to Greg, we need to get the trees down. He's like, oh, whatever, maybe. And I said, fine, we'll do it next weekend. So his mom comes in on January 8th and her comment is, your trees are still up. And, you know, I'm like, yeah, they are. But I still feel guilty about it. I still feel bad. I still feel judged, you know, yeah, that they weren't down. And there was something else that came up.
Like, you should have done it. Like, she didn't say that. I mean, if you're reading that into what she said.
Oh, no. She's very sweet, but she would not expect her son to be taking down the Christmas trees. It's definitely on me.
But then definitely push that back. I mean, you say like, oh, yeah, no, I know Greg hasn't gotten to it yet.
My daughter has been out of school all year for two herniated discs, and she's going back. She went back today for the first time, but only for one class. Okay. So literally you have to drive up there and then come back. Well, as soon as we're done recording this interview, I'm doing a live workshop with 40 people online. I can't pick her up. So I needed my mother-in-law to pick her up, and I had a list of dates. And she looked at these and she said, oh, I might not be able to do one of these. And Greg said, I guess I'm going to come home from work and get her because these are the ones Lisa can't do. And he's finally on board to like, okay, well, I mean, during the week, I miss a lot of work driving these kids around, but these are ones where I literally can't do them. Mm-hmm. And then she said, oh. And all of a sudden she can do all of the dates, but it is very generational. So I think I'm older than you also, but it is very generational depending on how old your parents are, how old you are, what your expectations for yourself and your marriage and your kids. So part of it is, I do agree, we put a lot more on ourselves than is necessary, but there are other cultural norms around us in our neighborhood, in our family, in our, that are, you know, inadvertently going, you should be able to do it all. You should be able to do it all. And I'm finally saying, no, I can't do it all. And the trees are still up. And I'm sorry, somebody else is going to have to pick this kid up because I'm working. I don't know what part of this you people don't realize is working, but I'm working. Mm-hmm. Just because I'm in my bedroom.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So, yeah, so what perspective shift are you going to give me next, Laura? What's the next book?
So my next book is called Off the Clock, and it is coming out in late May. And I did a time diary study, had 900 people track their time for a day and then answer questions about how they felt about their time. Like if they felt like they had a lot of time or if they felt more pressed for time, starved for time. And I looked at the schedules between people who had a lot of time and people who felt pressed for time. So, well, what is the difference? Like, how do people spend their time differently and what can we learn from that? And I think, you know, there's some stuff that's more straightforward. There's a lot of stuff that's a bit more out there. One of the more interesting things to me is that people who felt like they had a lot of time were highly likely to have done something sort of memorable or out of the ordinary on that day that I had them record. So it was like a March Monday that I had people keep track of their time. And there were people who went like salsa dancing that night, or went to a movie that night, or went to
on a Monday
special dinner. Yeah, but even with a family, like go for a walk after dinner or something, or, you know, have a friend over on a Monday night, but who did something that was not like work, family, TV, bed. Those people felt like they had more time. And it's because, yeah, you're doing stuff with your time. Like, this is a more memorable March Monday than it would be otherwise, because you're doing something that you will actually remember. And when you do things that you remember, then time seems to expand. And so I think that's an interesting.
It's interesting you picked a Monday and not a weekend day, like a typical, you picked a typical work day and a typical work month. Yeah, that's really interesting. How
there's
do you come up with these studies?
March 27th. I'm curious, right? Like, what life looks like and what is the difference between people who feel like they have a lot of time and people who don't. I mean, these are like equivalently busy people. Everyone was working full time and raising children. Like, it was not that, you know, because I know one way to feel less busy is don't work full time or don't have kids. I mean, that yes, right there.
Yeah, definitely don't have kids. I don't know about the
work. But those are things that, like, I mean, have some obvious drawbacks if you make those as lifestyle choices.
Yeah.
And so you know, within those kind of constraints of life, like, what are the differences between people who feel like time is abundant and people who feel pressed for time? And yeah, so that's what we'll find out when it comes out, May 29th.
May 29th, you said end of May, but now you're saying May 29th, because I'm going to go put it on my Google calendar.
Sorry, everyone mark your calendars.
I'll be the first review.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Laura, anything else you'd like to share with the Organize 365 audience?
No. I mean, I'd love for people to come visit me on my blog. I blog at lauravanderkam.com. That's just my name. I love to write about time and how we spend it, careers, family related stuff. We have a great discussion going there. So please drop by, leave a comment. I'd love to hear from people.
And definitely download Best of Both Worlds podcasts. Really good, conversational. I really enjoy it. You guys are going to keep it up in 2018?
Oh, that's the plan. We keep going. We're having a grand old time with it. So yeah, we'll keep going with it.
New baby, and Sarah just keeps on going.
Yeah, like, Sarah just had a new baby in December, but we were back recording within a week or two, so she was all on it.
Crazy. Laura, it has been such a pleasure to have you on the podcast. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
In 6.5 years, Organize 365 has grown from a little idea in my brain to an actual corporation. Over that time, we've had blog posts and podcasts and free courses and paid courses and courses that go with each other. All of that has been streamlined, organized, and put onto a new website, organize365.com. All of the past free and paid courses have been organized into the All Access program. All Access is a combination of the 100-day home organization program and all of the paper organization offerings that I have. There are three components to All Access: the 100-day home organization program, the complete paper organization program, and then All Access courses and bonuses. Let me explain each one. The 100-day home organization program has launched 7 times. And we've had over 1,000 people get their homes organized using the 100-day home organization program. It has been streamlined into 3 components, the first of which is an online membership site that works from your phone and can track your progress. It's amazing. And this summer, I re-recorded every single video in the program, and we added about 20 new days. With that program, when you first purchase, you will get a planner. The planner is only designed to take you through one 100-day cycle. It's 120 days of planning, and the program is actually printed in the planner. So the day you're supposed to be doing the program is printed in the planner. Additionally, in the planner, we have added new printables for every single week. They are not available online. They are only in the planner. So for the planning your kitchen week, there's a 2-page spread in the planner about how to plan your kitchen. There's a 2-page spread about how you track your spices. when you go through your closet, there's a 2-page spread about how to decide which clothes are best in this season. And as you keep your planners, you will do your clothing all 3 seasons and you'll be able to see your clothing through the planner. So there's a planner. Every other season, you can buy a planner for $47 for one planner or $127 for 3 planners, and they're shipped out every 100 days. Then the last piece of the 100-day home organization program is the private Facebook group, where you can encourage your friends, share pictures, get input from each other, say you're having a bad day, say you're having a great day, and everyone will support and encourage you. And then once a week, Lisa comes on for 30 minutes and answers your pre-submitted questions in a Facebook Live. That is the 100-day home organization program. You could buy it independently or you could buy it as part of All Access. And as of today, you can buy it whenever you find the program. So there is nothing more frustrating than on November 2nd, realizing you want to get organized and you have to wait until January to order a program. So you may be asking, well, if a planner is included and I join in November, what planner will I get? We have undated planners. So after the 100-day program starts on Labor Day, starting September 11th, we will send out an undated planner until December. And then in December, we will start sending out the dated planner for January again. And all of this is on the website. The second part is the complete paper program. This was also called the Sunday Basket Club. You'll hear me calling it the Sunday Basket Club. The complete paper program is everything you need to get your paper organized, and this is what Organize 365 has been developing over the last 18 months. Over the last 18 months, we have gone from the concept of a Sunday basket to a physical Sunday basket with workshops, with certified organizers, and physical binders that help you eliminate your filing cabinet. So in the complete paper program, you get the complete Sunday basket, the physical Sunday basket, and the workshops that go with it, all 4 of the household binders shipped to your door, and the Sunday Basket Club. The Sunday Basket Club is our private Facebook group for people who are going through and organizing their paper. And people who are going through and organizing their paper actually get 2 live events almost every week. So every single Sunday, for 90 minutes, there is a Facebook Live led by a professional organizer. So it's like virtual class where you could do your Sunday basket every single week with a professional organizer. That way, if you have a question or you're stuck or you'd like input on your Sunday basket, you can ask those questions and they will give you real-time answers. Also, 2 times a month, I go into that Facebook group and I do a Facebook Live and I answer pre-submitted paper organizing questions. If you were in the 100-day program before, there used to be a little bit of paper organizing in there. We had a whole paper organizing week. That has been moved out, and that is now part of the paper organizing class. So you may ask, what's the difference? The 100-day home organization program focuses on the physical spaces in your home. The complete paper organization course focuses on getting all of your paper organized from your Sunday basket all the way to your filing cabinet. Each of these programs are purchased individually for $497, and you get everything that's in that program for $497. If you buy both programs as All Access, or you already have one of these programs and you buy the other one, you will be upgraded to All Access. Well, what is All Access? All Access is some of the previously free courses that I had are now only in the dashboard under All Access, the most popular of which are the email organizing course and the From Hot Messroom to Organized Storage course. I know, some of you are going, darn it, I wanted to do that course for free, or that course used to be free and I can't believe I didn't take advantage of it when it was free. From Hot Messroom to Organized Storage totally works. Totally works. It will take any hot mess room, and it is step-by-step 28 days of how to go from I don't even know where to start to a beautifully organized storage room. And what I found over time when I think about Molly and what she needs is she needed the From Hot Mess Room to Organized Storage after she had already gotten her mindset around her paper and her home. And that this is in addition to the home and paper organizing program. It's not really a standalone program. You will pull in and you will do this one within your getting organized year. Also, the email organization course has been rewritten and re-recorded as well, and this will really help you organize all that digital papery type stuff. There are a couple other free bonuses in All Access. We have all of the color printables that I used to sell on Etsy. Those are over in All Access now. I do not have an Etsy store anymore. Also, the 10 Steps to Organized Move ebook is in there. And in the Hot Mess Room course, we had a great ebook that tells you where to donate, sell, and recycle everything. That email also is in All Access. So how does this work? Because Lisa, you used to say, I could do the 100-day program and it was 15 minutes a day. And I did. And the reason I said that was because that's what you told me. You wanted an organization program that you could do, you know, in a short amount of time for a short amount of minutes. And I'm just not good at marketing. I'm not good at, like, if you do this 30 days and 5 minutes a day, you'll be a millionaire. Like, I'm a realist. I am practical. I am functional. I'm just going to be honest with you. If you really want to live an organized life, like you see me living on Instagram and being able to have a really bad day, but not take my whole world down because I have organization underneath me, it takes a year. It took me a year. The whole year I turned 40, I went through my house 3 different times that year and I finally got it organized. And I went from drowning to finally treading water and swimming in 1 year. You need to go through the 100-day program 3 times. That's why I've always had it as lifetime access. And when you do that, you naturally, you need a Sunday basket, and you naturally start organizing your papers. And when you don't buy all of the binders, what happens is you start to try to figure out how to organize your papers into binders or files or whatever. You spend more time figuring out alternative ways to organize than to just use the system that works. So I know that there are going to be A, people who cannot afford the program, and B, that people that don't want to do All Access and don't want to buy all in, and that's totally fine with me. I'm 100% okay with that. But I also know, with the 1,000 people that have gone through it, that it works. It 100% works. So if you're ready to invest your time and your money into Organize 365, I know that if you give me 1 hour a day and 1 full year, we can give you an organized house and organized paper. I just know that it's true. And when I was at the national convention, I threw this out to everyone and I said, you know, the programs are not inexpensive. I mean, it's basically $500 for each program, or it's $9.97 for All Access. That's a lot of money. If you divide that out over a year, it's $3 a day. I'm not even going to get into coffee. We can't take away coffee, so forget that. It's $3 a day. But I asked the audience and I said, if you spend an hour a day and $3 a day, do you feel at the end of having done this for 1 year that you got back more than an hour a day and $3 a day? And unequivocally, they all said yes. So if you may say, I'm going to invest $1,000, I'm going to tell you, you're going to get that $1,000 back either in selling things in your house, or you're going to get it back by being able to do more of the work that you're normally paid for, or saving money by not rebuying things that you already have, or whatever. You're going to get that money back. And the hour a day, the national statistic is for Americans that we spend 55 minutes a day looking for things. So if you think that investing an hour a day in organizing your house, you don't have, you're already spending the time you don't have looking for things, forgetting things, running things back up to the kids' school because you forgot to send it because you didn't plan. It's not that we don't have the time. Of course, we don't have it. Nobody has extra time. But what are the things in your life that you could give up to invest an hour so that you could get back an hour next year? And this is the game changer, you guys. When you really go all in and do All Access and you really decide, I'm done, I'm getting organized, I'm going to live an organized life, do you know what you get? Time. And they keep saying we can't buy time. But I'm going to tell you, if you get organized, you're basically buying time. I don't want to brag or anything, but there are a lot of days where I'm like, I wonder what I could do. And my poor team, what happens is I come up with a new program, like this kids program that I'm developing or whatever, because I have so much time because I don't spend any time organizing my house anymore. I just don't, because it's organized. Don't worry, it'll get unorganized again when I change phases of life. But right now it's organized. And the benefit I get from an organized house is time. So if you're thinking you don't have enough time, I want you to think about a year from now, if you don't do the All Access course, will you have more time? Because I will tell you, if you do it, you will. And everybody says you can't buy time. Okay, go to organize365.com. Now, hopefully you understand 100-day program, still the same, basically. Complete paper program is all the stuff you've heard me coming out with over the last 18 months, but we finally organized it, condensed it, and put it into a program. And then All Access is both of those, plus the additional free bonuses. Enjoy!